The weakest of all political demands is, give me something to vote for.
I'm occupying Wall Street because if you're not outraged, then you're not paying attention.
Of the economy.
I care deeply about what's happening to the country.
People are losing their homes.
I'm unemployed. I'm homeless.
My retirement literally embezzled.
Corporate banking behemoths rob the American people.
That ain't right, man.
Stand up and say, this is unacceptable and we're not going to take it anymore.
This country needs an enema. Well, the world needs an enema.
Hi, this is Eve Silber and you are listening to Occupy Wall Street Radio. I have as my guest with me today someone a lot of us know, Sister Susan Wilcox. Welcome.
Thanks, Eve.
Tell us a little bit about what brought you to the Occupy movement, because you've been here for a long time.
Yeah. I showed up in early October of 2011 after a student actually came rushing into my office. He had been assigned to go do interviews at Occupy Wall Street and stayed 7 hours. He came into my office the next day, so he knew I would be someone he could talk to about this, and was so excited. We took down a big board in one of the school hallways. He had brought things. So he had brought the Occupy Wall Street newspaper and a T-shirt that he had screened. And so we made this bulletin board and put up a big piece of big white paper with, you know, Occupy Wall Street, what do you think? Where people could their ideas about what they thought about it.
And who are your students?
This is St. Joseph's College in Brooklyn. And these are undergraduates in a variety of programs. He's happened to be in the social sciences. But his enthusiasm said, I have to get down there. And so I went down there at the first chance I could get, and I was stunned at what I encountered, stunned and moved. By that time, the park was fairly developed in the sense that the sacred space was there, the arts and culture, the library, the kitchen. The kitchen had the gray water system with the education signs about what they were doing with it. General assemblies were happening. And I recall really vividly approaching the park and just being choked up and moved. And because I'd been working in studying transformation of consciousness and social movement, I said, this is it. It's happening. This is what we've been waiting for. And really, tears came to my eyes in that very first moment. And I recall taking other people there. I started bringing people. And several people had the exact same experience that I did. So I knew it wasn't just me. I was encountering a transformational space.
And you described that the student came to you knowing that you would get it and be interested. Why you? What was different or is different about you here at St. Joseph?
Well, this particular student works in my office, the Office of Campus Ministry, and he knew we paid attention to things that happen socially. And so he knew exactly.
Are there a lot of other nuns in the movement? I have not met any.
Well, actually, there are a few that visited New York, but as far as being involved, not so many in New York, but also as the movement spread around the country and actually around the world, I was in contact with a sister from England also. There were sisters who were present in the parks all over the country, and we formed like a little Facebook group of ourselves and kept, you know, contact. In fact, there was a Sister of St. Joseph in New Orleans whose job was police accountability. So her job as in her work of police accountability was protecting the occupiers and paying attention to how the occupiers were being treated by the police. So she was like really, really involved, even as far as working on this landmark court case. So,
was that something you had had a lot of experience with before Occupy, these kinds of encounters with the police?
No, not at all. In fact, I was working largely in the UN structure. So I was really removed at right before Occupy with a lot of the grassroots movements going on. And so the work doing at the UN was through a collection of non-governmental agencies who try and bring information up from the grassroots and filter information down. So actually, at the time of Occupy, I started spending less and less time at the UN and more time with Occupy, and eventually resigned from my position at the UN and at my NGO, and so that I could do this, spend more of my extra time.
And how would you describe it in the movement? On the ground, I guess, is the difference for you?
Yeah. I really saw, because what we all knew, people who work in politics, people who work with NGOs or advocating for NGOs, know that you're only as powerful as your base. And you can only push forward, you know, what it is that your base is bringing forward. So, as you know, we always heard at the UN, we talked to diplomats and they'd say, well, personally, I totally agree with you, but you need to talk to your government, because your government is the thing that's blocking this. So so we were always very aware, especially as U.S. citizens, with the power that the U.S. had globally, that our responsibility as U.S. citizens was more powerful than being right in front of a diplomat.
And I remember I met you in the winter, and just in the early winter, and then in this action on December 17th that gets referenced to a lot, because it was an action that involved a lot of ministers and a lot of people of faith, because it was coming up against Trinity Church. You got arrested that day, and I was on jail support, and there were a lot of people coming out of jail, some photographers who I had dealt with that didn't mean to get arrested and didn't know that was going to happen. So I remember I asked you, sister, did you mean to get arrested? You gave me a very interesting answer.
This was a act of civil disobedience for me. And it was actually the first time I'd ever done a CD. And I really, my motivation was in it was that I knew how important the movement was, and I wanted my community to really understand that and to be part of it. And I knew they wouldn't be in it unless we were in it. And this was a way to be in it. And it was also, this particular action was about confronting church and what does it mean to be church? And so I really felt that this was an important action for making that point.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because I recently heard an interview with some of these American nun leaders who had to come up against the Vatican investigation of them. And the interviewer asked the sister, can't you do the work without the church? And she said, no, because it's because I am the church that I do this work.
Right. There, you know, you can be an activist for a short period of time, but unless there's something fundamental that's really rooted, that acts as a rooting influence, it's just too crazy. You'll burn out. And this is how sisters and other religious people stay in desperate conditions for so long, because there's something to hang on to and something that's giving energy and source to what they're doing.
Explain that a little more. How can someone create that for themselves? As a way to endure and stay committed.
Yeah. Well, just for, I think probably the easiest way for anybody is to adopt a practice of meditation. And then, you know, just developing those skills of, self-centering, and then bringing in other helpful, whatever the path may be. I mean, I think if you ask for a path, it's going to be set before you. So it's just take control of your inner self and open yourself up to a path and it will appear.
Now, this business of being an American nun, and it happened just about the time of Occupy that this investigation was going on. Did this affect your life?
Well, it was, we had wonderful leadership that were doing an impeccable job of taking whatever was coming and responding to it. So it really left the rest of us free to do what we needed to do in our regular ministries, because one of the big critiques of it is that this was such a distraction. And I think that was really lessened by the leadership, because we could easily support how they were handling it and then leaving us to like not be distracted so much by it.
And the issue was that it was viewed that your actions of serving communities rather than advancing the ideas and the agenda of the church was determined to be an undermining of the church. That was what the investigation was supposing, right?
Well, let's see. I'll say this very, I'll try and say this as simply as possible, because actually it's actually kind of a complicated issue, and it really gets generalized in the press. Yeah, there was a sense that bishops wanted to exert their authority about over the agenda of U.S. Sisters, and especially this Leadership Conference of Women Religious. So they didn't feel like we were paying enough attention to them, maybe, or feeling like they didn't have control. So who knows what that's about? But
it sounds to me like this issue resonates a little bit in your decision to commit an act of civil disobedience against Trinity Church with the Occupy movement.
Actually, that was coincidental.
In your own actions?
To the extent that the Catholic Church is the largest landowner in New York City, I would say. But honestly, more at a parochial level, it resonated. And not so much as part of this, like, Vatican investigation part.
You are listening to Occupy Wall Street Radio. This is Eve Silber, and I am talking with Sister Susan Wilcox. WBAI is at 99.5 FM, New York, and also on the web at WBAI.org. We are talking about her involvement in the Occupy movement, and where are we now with you in the Occupy movement? And I know you're involved in Occupy Catholics and other things. What's going on now for you in the movement? And maybe you can even talk about some of the actions that you've coordinated.
Well, Occupy Catholics and Occupy Faith have both been important affinity groups for me to be involved with. And also, just in terms of meeting so many other committed people of faith in the city of New York that I probably never really would have encountered, has been a huge gift.
Was it hard for people to connect before the Occupy movement in this way?
I think we didn't have such strong structures for doing that. It really pulled a lot of people in and created relationship among us that now, are very strong bonds. That's what strong experiences do for people. So definitely a broad range of connections that I never could have imagined. That's been an extraordinary gift and so beautiful for me personally. But Occupy Catholics has been especially doing trying to constantly see who we are as Catholics within the movement and trying to act out of that. And so most recently at one point, Rolling Jubilee, taking the name of Jubilee, decided it would be a good idea to have conversations with their their friends in the faith community. So it was really wonderful to really talk about those and think through what does Jubilee mean for people of faith and what that could mean for the debt resistors movement. So we were really happy to be a part of some. We were asked to help with the messaging. You know, how do we explain Jubilee? So I wrote an article that was highly edited but, by wonderful people, but that went out into a Catholic America magazine, which is a popular Catholic magazine, and worked and lined up some radical nuns for the Rolling Jubilee telethon and
built that bridge.
Yeah, hoping to build that bridge.
And what other things have you done? I remember going to an action with you on a very hot night last summer.
Oh, yes.
In front of
St.
Patrick's. Yes. Talk about that.
So last summer, the U.S. bishops, in resisting the Affordable Care Act's provisions, decided to stage have a fortnight of freedom. And it was about religious freedom. And so when they did that at Occupy Catholics, and again, like trying to figure out, like, what is our role as Catholics, especially as in Occupy Catholics, we're always trying to, like, take that Vatican II baptismal call that says that everyone is called to holiness and to action. And so it's not just, you know, those leaders of the hierarchy, although they're an important part of the whole church, they're not the church. The people are part of the church. And so we're always trying to act out of that, you know, we, the people of the church, what would we do? And so we really like the idea of freedom. And so we wanted to know what the people thought about freedom. And so we staged a general assembly on freedoms on the steps of St. Patrick's Cathedral, one very hot July night. And we also let the St. Patrick's Cathedral know that this is what we were planning. So
they responded with barricades and a large police presence.
Yes, yes. So as we were walking up, my co-facilitator and I were walking up towards the cathedral, and we could already see the barricades, and we knew got the message.
That's their response.
Yes.
And it was kind of funny because it wasn't a very large group. There were many, many more police officers.
Yes. Yes.
And there were people camping out that hot night.
Yes. We had the General Assembly, which had a number of people. And then, because it was Fort Night of Freedom, we couldn't resist Night Fort of Freedom in Occupy style and staying overnight on the steps. So a small group of us stayed overnight and engaged in a pretty friendly way with the police. And we had a counseling session at one point because there was a few teens that came by who were, one just wanted a place to, safe space for the night, and another one who was a little bit in crisis. So we were kind of ministering there on the street also. Also, another one of our group, Lauren Hart, who's a very good photographer, went around and took pictures of activity in the area. He found homeless people. He found a few businesses that were open late at night. And
didn't we also have people camping out
at Rock Center for the Kenny Chesney concert happening the next day?
I remember that there were people without a police presence sleeping on the street just a few blocks away. They were there for the Today Show.
Right.
That was funny. You did the act of washing feet on the anniversary, was it, of Occupy? I don't know if that was the only occasion, but I certainly remember it then. So you can imagine, for me, I made a little connection recently with the new Pope. And I was like, that's what Sister Susan did. Can you talk about that action, what it means in that tradition? And also, can you talk about this new Pope
Yeah.
I don't think we're quite occupying the Vatican yet, but is there any reason to believe that something better is happening? Well, talk about the custom of washing the feet.
Well, actually, the custom of washing of the feet in the Catholic tradition and the larger Christian world is usually takes place on Holy Thursday as part of the Triduum of the Holy Days that we just experienced. And the washing of the feet is an act that was that Jesus did to signify that a leader is one of service. And the washing of the feet is it was a really common Jewish thing to do. These were all Jews in the original washing of the feet.
And this is washing other people's feet.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, you weren't washing your own feet. You washed someone else's feet. So in a Jewish home, you might do that. So as Jesus washes the feet of each of the disciples, he's calling them to a leadership of service. And that's what we take out of it.
And what did you do on the 17th, or was it the 16th
so,
that you did it?
Well, actually what happened is a year ago, we were gathering after the Holy Days at this time a year ago, and we said, darn, we should have gone on Holy Thursday. We should have gone and washed the feet of the occupiers because there was still encampments, a number of encampments going on. In fact, there was one at Federal Hall at the time.
The Freedom Cage.
And so we thought we might do that for the anniversary for May Day, as part of mutual aid, but we wanted to try it out. So that very night, and we were meeting at 60 Wall Street, so we were meeting right by Federal Hall and decided, let's try it out. And three of us got our supplies together to go wash the feet of occupiers at Federal Hall, mostly so we could just test it out. This was a test. Did we think of the right things? How much water do we need? You know, it was really a very practical act. But it turned out to be so amazing. And as we sat in public view with federal SWAT surrounding the place at the time, and this simple act of foot washing that was going on, that so many people commented that they were very moved by that. So we knew that foot washing was a keeper for us at that point.
And then you did it again at the anniversary. How did it play out on that day?
Well, we did it at the town square,
right,
on the Saturday
in Washington
before,
square.
Right?
We and had then the down at that General Assembly too, or no? I just remember you being there, I guess.
Yeah, I was just. Okay. We were just at the General Assembly, but we were part of
Occupy Faith
and Veteran, and the Veterans for Peace group were a group together, an affinity group for the anniversary. And so we gathered with that group.
And what about this new pope and his washing of feet? Is that as significant to you as it is to the media?
Well, so we have this new pope, and it's a very interesting thing about this new pope because... Well, first of all, Pope Benedict resigned, and a pope can't resign. So right away we have something that can't be that is. And then sort of a second general rule is that Jesuits who are part of an order that serves the pope cannot be pope. So Jesuits serve the pope. They're not the pope, but one is, because Pope Francis is a Jesuit. So we've got two things that can't be but are.
Okay.
And so this seems to be the trend that we see happening. So he's been so far breaking all the rules. he's been good for Occupy because it's like
a sense of a shift here.
Right, right.
And you talked about your expertise being in what? What was that term you mentioned earlier?
Evolution of consciousness.
All right.
Transformation of consciousness, yeah.
And give us your expertise about where we are right now with that.
So, yeah. Right now we're really going through a transition, trying to figure out what's worth keeping, what do we need to leave behind. And my advice to Occupy would be to not hold on to things too tightly, which they really haven't done. but allow themselves to be molded by the times and by what they're encountering, and really look deeply into what's touching people at a very fundamental level.
That is really good advice. I kind of wanted you to add to it just a little more.
So
fundamentally, what does that mean in a day-to-day?
Well, one of the things that we know that happened at the original act was that it touched on what people were really feeling, but it wasn't being expressed. So at a very wide level, and that was the genius of it. So always like going deep, not so much worrying about, you know, what is clever or what will sell in the media, but what is going to touch the individual person. That's what made Occupy, is it touched the individual.
Thank you, Sister Susan. Thank you for coming in and talking with me. I want to thank our engineer, Michael G. Haskins, and our technical producer, Reggie Johnson. You have been listening to Occupy Wall Street Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM, New York. To email this show, you write OccupyWallStreetRadio@gmail.com. You can find our archives on the website at WBAI.org, as well as ways to contribute and make this station something that lives long and prospers. WBAI is a listener-supported, free speech, commercial-free radio station. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.